Hey everyone, welcome to Sex Gets Real. This is Dawn Sarah, and this week I have an expert talking about something we have not really explored on the show before, and I can't wait for you to hear all about it. So I want to welcome you. Hello to Princess Kelly.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So I want to tell everybody, for those of you that don't know, Princess Kali, it's K-A-L-I. Princess Kali is an author, an entrepreneur, a coach, and a speaker. You've published a book called Enough to Make You Blush, Exploring Erotic Humiliation.
Yeah.
Which is going to be one of the things that we spend a lot of time rolling around in today. And then we're going to go all kinds of kink and dominatrix stuff and just like all this goodness. So I'm
all
so excited you're here.
Yes. Me too. Awesome.
So I'd love to start with this book that you wrote. So Enough to Make You Blush, Exploring Erotic Humiliation. So for our listeners who may not know, can you just kind of give us the like 10,000 foot view of what erotic humiliation is?
So erotic humiliation is something that's not always even understood by kinky people, but essentially it is an arousal response to what would be considered traditionally negative experiences or feelings, such as embarrassment or degradation or shame. These experiences then become recontextualized within a consensual framework that allows an experience of being turned on and a kind of erotic energy to be attached to these taboo feelings.
I'm like so fascinated by this. And I love that you're bringing up all of these like really interesting experiences that most people in their day-to-day lives would try to avoid. So things like embarrassment, humiliation, degradation, even objectification. And here we're talking about like purposely cultivating that feeling as part of your arousal experience and your erotic experience and kind of like allowing the taboo to feel squicky and yucky for fun.
Yes, but context really matters. You know, even people who are heavy humiliation fetishists don't like to, you know, get yelled at by their boss in front of their colleagues because the context is different, you know, like just the same way as people who like to be spanked in the bedroom don't want somebody to come up and kick them in the shin. Like, you know, there is a difference between good pain and bad pain. And that is definitely true for erotic humiliation. And so, you know, context and consent is a huge part of it. But yeah, basically these kinksters that are into this kind of play are seeking out a particular version of experiences that a lot of people really try pretty hard to avoid.
So I would love to know, I know one of the things that has drawn me to kink over the years is the fact that there's literally limitless possibilities with how someone can live their way into and experience their kink. But at the same time, there's some common threads that we see, like with people who enjoy bondage or SM and that kind of stuff. And so I'd love to know, like, for people who are interested in kind of the erotic humiliation, degradation, is there a couple of scenes or experiences that come up as a little bit more common that maybe you could share some examples with our listeners?
Most definitely. A phrase that I've coined recently is slut space. kinksters talk a lot about top space and subspace and these like power dynamic focused head spaces. And I have found that the kind of slutty sexual objectification is one of the most popular forms of erotic embarrassment play across the gender spectrum. That because really, I mean, even, you know, traditionally identified masculine individuals aren't necessarily celebrated for being slutty. I mean, you know, obviously there's the whole, you know, gender dynamic of women being whores and men being players, but when that gets turned on its head, then this idea of sexual objectification becomes actually really, really popular for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
So sexual objectification and slut space and being treated as a sexual object, I think, is one of the most common experiences for a desire for humiliation play, because there is this really great dynamic between being sexually desired and all of the social taboos around wanting to be desired and wanting to have sexual expression and all of that kind of stuff. Really, humiliation, if I can just give it this little bit of context too, humiliation deals in social taboos. That is the core nature of all humiliation play. That to get meta for just a moment, you know, you couldn't have humiliation play without misogyny and sexism, classism, and even racism. I mean, that these really, these social experiences are a critical component of what erotic humiliation is, that the reason that these things are so attractive is because they're not supposed to be.
Oh, I love that. Because they're not supposed to be, but they are.
Yeah. Because we can't, you know, one of the, a common saying is how women are, the number one fantasy for women is are rape fantasies. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that is accurate language. I believe that it's ravishment fantasies, right? Because women are socially taught not to have desire or be desired. And so the way that we then get around this socialization is by creating an environment where we don't, where we give up the choice. Oh gosh, golly gee, what could I have done? He overtook me. And that allows us to get around these socializations to fulfill our sexual desires mm-hmm. that are not always like reasonable or politically correct.
I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that, because almost every single time I talk to someone about their rape fantasies, it's incredibly pleasurable and someone has kind of taken control away from them, but it's not about harming you or
right, violence.
Like, I mean, right, exactly.
Rape is, and it's not to say that there aren't people who have rape fantasies. I'm not, yeah. You know, that's a fully legitimate, also politically incorrect, but when done through consensual appropriate avenues, is a totally legit fantasy, right?
Yeah.
But that the language isn't always appropriate. That rape is about power and violence. Mm-hmm. Ravishment is about letting go of responsibility for sexual energy.
Yes. Oh,
and
I love that.
That's what a lot of women and or people who have mixed or perhaps negative feelings about their own sexual desires, then that's like that's an out. That's a way to experience their sexuality without kind of claiming the supposed shame that we're supposed to feel about it. Like the bad shame, not the good mm-hmm. shame.
So I'm curious, because we're talking about humiliation and this erotic power of kind of living out the things that are most socially taboo. And I wonder, for people who are like actively working against kind of social constructs in our society, and they delight in being other and on the fringes, do you find that either humiliation play is not as interesting to them, or does it take on a different dynamic than for people who are a little bit more living within the traditional realm and use humiliation as a way to kind of break out of that tradition that they live in?
Well, like you said at the start of the interview, right, there are so many different paths mm-hmm. into kink, even though there are common threads. And so I'd say, no, pretty much anybody can find a taboo to play with, because, I mean, one of the things I do one-on-one coaching, and I particularly work with women around sexual confidence, both on dominant, submissive, switch, you know, any of that energy. And I've met and worked with plenty of women who are feminist activists, who, you know, who really are out there talking about and fighting against sexism and against misogyny, who then come back and want to be gangbanged and have 12 men come on their face.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you take that person who by traditional standards is maybe living a more aware life. I mean, for lack of a better word, right, than maybe your average citizen kind of going through the world. Anybody and everybody has taboos that can be fun to play with.
I love that. And you know, what's interesting is a couple of years ago, I remember somebody talking about how he had this fetish for playing in someone's shame, but not the kind of shame that was like name calling and very kind of outward, but he wanted to find the shame that was like deep inside of you. And just even saying the word made you like blush and want to turn away. And like, he wanted to play in that space. Right. And I remember like when he said that to me, my initial thought was this like deep discomfort of just like, oh God. But then the more I thought about it, the more arousing it sounded of like, when do you ever really give yourself permission to find that place that just makes you want to like hide from the world because you're so ashamed of it, and then let someone purposely like play with that?
Well, exactly. And it's super powerful. I mean, one of the things that I talk about often in my books, the book and in my classes, is the number one key concept of erotic humiliation. And it's this: you cannot humiliate someone with something they don't find humiliating. And so often one of the biggest obstacles that I see in people is that they make assumptions, right? I'm going to call you names. I'm going to call you worthless. I'm going to, you know, maybe you've just given me 12 orgasms, and then I'm going to call you a worthless worm. And then I'm confused why that doesn't maybe, you know, trigger the right things inside of you. And so this person that you're talking about had a much better insight into the idea that you really have to dig deeper, because humiliation is so, so personal. You know, I mean, kink and sex obviously is always personal, but one of the ways to think of it is that, like, if you lined up 10 people and you gave each of them a spanking, physically they're probably going to experience it in a similar way. Obviously, all of our bodies process pain differently, fibromyalgia, there's a lot of things, right? But if you think of it this way, right, that you can spank somebody and you can have a fair you can have a fairly good guess of how they will respond to that, as long if you talk about it, right? Whereas if you come at humiliation and you try to line 10 people up and you try to humiliate 10 people in the exact same way, you're going to get very different responses, because every single person is a different Rubik's cube of needs, of intensity and style and type, right? That there, somebody might be turned on by the kind of distant, yes, you're a worthless maggot and you're going to crawl around on the ground. But somebody else might feel more connected to, look at you, little slut. I love it when you put yourself on display for me. So those are both tapping into this idea of erotic humiliation and erotic inferiority, but they're very different manifestations of it.
Yeah, I love that. Yes. Like when you were talking about those two different verbal statements that you were making, one, the first one about like, you know, you're a maggot and all this kind of stuff, like it brings in me this anger of like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
But the second one of like, look at you putting yourself on display, it totally felt different inside of me.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what, so I call it your kernel kink. Okay. So like a little kernel, like a seed. And what that is your goal feeling. I find that kinksters focus so much on activity, you know, that I flog, therefore I dom. I crawl, therefore I submit. And I honestly think that's bullshit. There's no better word to describe it than bullshit, because the fact of the matter is that how it makes you feel is the most important thing. And then you find activities that trigger those feelings, not the other way around.
Oh my God. That's like one of the best things that's ever been said on this podcast in 2.5 years. I agree with that so much. I see so much bullshit doming going on because it's like, well, I'm going to tell you to kneel and do this thing. And it's like, well, but if that doesn't trigger in me the feeling that I want to offer you myself in this way, then that's not dominating me. Like that, right. And it's going to be different with each person too. And so I love this goal feeling. And then what are the activities that help us achieve that versus let's do these activities and then
and
just
and hope,
hope
that,
right.
that it creates this feeling. And I mean, the thing is most people are working with stereotypes as education, right? That if you watch, you know, the big conversation that's been happening around, you know, is porn education? I think porn is entertainment that you can be inspired from. But for a lot of people, they're looking at these myths around dominance and submission. And they're taking those things as like, oh, if I do that, then I'm dominant. And I think that we just, in order to kind of have the most, like, I hate the word authentic. It's so overplayed these days, but to have the most true experience for each of us, you do have to do a little bit of psychological work with yourself to see what it is you're trying to get out of these experiences. For some people, it really is just kinky, sexy fun. Like spank me, fuck me, let's go to bed. You know, and that's fantastic. But there are a lot of people who identify with kink more deeply. And I found that those with psychological interests in kink, like psychological play, like humiliation, tend to have more complex needs, right? And that's not putting either of those people down. It's just saying that if you want to really have some like mind-blowing experiences, use your mind.
I totally agree. I love that. Yeah. And just like, instead of following what you see lots of other people doing and hoping it works for you, instead really kind of exploring what are all of the opportunities and how do they make me feel? And then rolling around in the ones that feel like really aligned with what it is that you want to create. And I think one of the things that's so delicious is like at this point in my life, I might be like super busy and super stressed. And so I don't want to spend hours and hours and hours doing some like deep psychological scene. But in a couple of years, I might totally want that.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. I mean, you gotta find what works for you, obviously. You know what I mean? And I am a big advocate of kinky people, whether you're just getting started or whether you've been playing for a really long time, to spend at least a little bit of your kinky time scaling back and trying things more singularly. Like one of the things that I talk about is don't stuff yourself on the kink buffet, right? Is that, you know, so many people, like when you discover the kink world or kind of throughout your kink journey, there's so many different ways to play and energies to play with and toys to play with and ways to tie people up that it's like, it's easy to, you know, run down this buffet and stuff all the food in your face. And then it's like, oh my God, buffets are disgusting because you now have split pea soup and chocolate mousse and lobster all in your mouth. And that's gross. And I think of kink in the same way, that one of the best ways, like one of the best investments that you can do in your own sex life, I think, is to pick out one type of ways to, like, one way to play. And so play with verbal and don't incorporate other things, or, you know, or play with a bit of bondage and approach it more as a science experiment, right? Because that way you really get to test out what these feelings are, and then you can learn to layer them and become a, you know, a pretty masterful kink artist when you learn kind of what all the different flavors are and how they work together.
I love that advice. I absolutely love that advice. Yeah, instead of jumping into like bondage and dom sub and sensation all at once and then not knowing which part of it really worked for you and which part didn't.
Right.
Yeah, starting with one and trying it on and seeing what versions work for you. And then I love how you said layering. I think that, you're right, just leads to a much richer experience.
Yeah, and again, you know, there really is no one right way to do kink. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but after 16 years of full immersion perversion that I have had as a career, I do feel confident in saying that when you invest that kind of thought and time, the payoff in your play is huge. It's huge.
Oh my gosh. I just like everything you're saying. I'm just like, yes, 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 preach.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm so passionate about kink, and I think that it can be such an incredible tool, not only for like sexy good times, but for personal growth and for self-awareness and for all this other just human stuff, you know, that I think it's pretty great when people are able to use their sexuality as a way to improve their self-awareness and world awareness, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that actually leads me to two different questions.
And then go masturbate. And you know, right. It's like, hey, self-awareness, now let's masturbate.
Right. Let's go get off because that was hot.
Let's get off the focus that this feels fucking good.
Exactly.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's okay.
You said that you have a couple of reader questions.
Everything that you just said made me think of two different questions that I have. So the first is, you mentioned 16 years of this immersion in perversion. And I'd love to know, based on all of your experience as a masterful kinkster, what has been one of your favorite humiliation scenes that you've ever done?
Oh my God, that's really hard because I've done a lot and they are all really entertaining. Like there's the one where I turned him into a human hot dog. He was completely shaved and I squirted mustard. I actually have a video of that one and told a story at the story event. Turned him into this human hot dog and made him put relish and mustard behind his ear for a week. Really fun. And then I was at this really great event in the Baltimore area called a Dark Odyssey Summer Camp, which I'll be teaching at this year. And my submissive Wimpy, it was really muddy and wet and rainy outside. And so I put him down in this big mud puddle in front of a door so that people could step over this mud puddle by stepping on him and squishing his face in the mud. Oh, we've been doing that. That's one of his favorite scenes to this day. So yeah, those are probably the top two that come to mind.
Oh my gosh, how fun. And like, one of the things I love about that is just like the creativity involved.
Yes. So for me, kink, so just the little bit about my 16 years background is that I was a professional dominatrix for 10 years and based in Boston, Massachusetts, but traveled quite a bit and was a prolific professional dominatrix. Also had a website, princesscallie.com, which was a femdom porn site that I self-produced. And through that, and then also being a lifestyle kinkster, and so I had quite a number of personal collared submissives that weren't clients, but actual like personal servants. And so through all of those experiences, I have had the opportunity to play with a wide variety of people and interests and, you know, intensity levels and all of that sort of stuff. And then also through the education I've done with teaching and talking with people and coaching and all of that kind of stuff that I totally forgot what led me off on this tangent. You said something. What did you say, Dawn?
The creativity.
Oh, that's right. The creativity. And so like I have a theater background and for me, absolutely the number one joy of all of this is the theatricality, the absurdity. Like I have an absurdity fetish. You know, if you'll notice, the two examples I gave you are ridiculous. You know, mm-hmm. Turning a man into a hot dog and squishing a man's face in the mud. Those are absurd. The kind of like for me, my kink is based in joy. If I'm not laughing, there's something wrong, you know, with that. And the kind of stretching that it requires of my creativity is something that like you're. Will it will never stop there will never be a moment where I think to myself, been there, done that for everything. There is always something weird and awesome and on the fringe and creative that you can do in our pervert's paradise.
And that to me is what's so exciting about giving yourself permission to explore kind of your erotic edges and watching your kind of erotic map constantly grow. Because I feel like so many people get really stuck in what sex is supposed to be, and then they feel resentful or really disappointed, you know, 20 years into their sexual experiences. And I think one of the things that's so beautiful about all the different ways that you can play with kink, and especially in this really creative space like you do, is like there's never a point where you run out of things to learn or try.
Really, truly. I mean, I have been... You know, my career is starting to move a little bit into the mainstream field, but I mean, I really have been entirely focused on kink for a really long time. And there is still stuff that I go, oh my God, I've never thought of that. Like, that's astounding to me, you know, that I could play so thoroughly in this space and still have things that inspire me and surprise me. Like, that's magical. And it's because, you know, even though kink is focused so much on activities, you know, bondage and spanking and those kinds of things, really all of that stuff, the core aspect of it, whether it's a physical way to play or a psychological way to play, is still the core aspect of it is happening in our minds. And so the only limitations that kink have are the limitations that your mind puts on it.
And that is delicious.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And even when you think of something like bondage, right? So if somebody says, I like bondage, that is a nearly useless statement. Because when I say bondage, I might be thinking head to toe saran wrap, a little tube out of your mouth, utter sensory deprivation. And when you say bondage, you might be thinking silk scarves around your wrists and a rosebud to keep your, you know, as a gag, to, you know, you must hold this rosebud in your mouth. Language is not adequate to express the variety in our minds, you know? And yeah. So there really is this amazing process that we all go through of exploration when it comes to kink.
So I want to circle back to your 10 years as a professional dominatrix in just a minute. But before we do that, since we're talking about kink and kind of this endless variety and the unbelievable ways we can all experience and live our way into kink, I know you run kinkacademy.com, which is something I've mentioned on the show a couple of times. And can you just tell everybody a little bit about it? Because it's something that I've watched, I don't know how many hours of videos on your site, but.
Awesome. Thank you. I would love to share about Kink Academy. Kink Academy, we are coming up on our 9-year anniversary. It is the original BDSM education video-based website. It currently has more than 130 educators and about 1,400 videos. And I launched Kink Academy. We are a small independent company. It is me and a few amazing freelancers that do everything for the website. And I am exceptionally proud of Kink Academy because it really presents an incredibly diverse perspective on kink. It is not intended to be porn. We certainly have a lot of sexy stuff, but the goal of Kink Academy is to pull back the curtain, to pull back that entertainment aspect, and to really show people the mechanics of how stuff happens so that you can then go and create these erotic, you know, porn type experiences on your own, but safely. Like, one of my favorite videos is Mikhail Newby teaching cocksucking and like gagging and choking. And so she's got this cock in her mouth, and you know, it's not a voiceover. It literally is her going, okay, so if you'll notice, as his cock goes deep in my throat, you know, and she's really breaking down the mechanics of choking on a cock. And personally, I think that that's a pretty badass way to teach sex, you know, and is a unique approach.
That is actually something that's come up over and over and over again with other sex educators. Specifically, Nadine Thornhill and I had this really great conversation about kids and how they learn about sex, and how because we don't actually have material that shows us what sex looks like and how to have it and all the different ways that we can experience it, then kids turn to porn to learn. And that's kind of the way all of us end up really learning about the true mechanics is porn and experience. And I agree right. with you. One of the things that's so amazing about the videos on Kink Academy is you're actually getting to see people in these acts talking about how they do it and what it feels like and what to look out for. And you can see it on real bodies. I mean, there's fat bodies yes. and older bodies and like people of color. And I mean, it's like such this rich, diverse space.
Cisgender, trans, yes. gender, queer.
Yes.
You know, I mean, absolutely one of the number one priorities for me throughout building Kink Academy has been diversity, you know, porn and some people that have approached kind of, edupornment or whatever that word is, you know, they do still tend to be pretty traditional, traditionally attractive people. Excuse me while I gag. And Kink Academy shows real people in real environments. It is not super glossy. You know, I traveled the country and would book a ton of educators to come through, and it is real kink by real kinksters, and I'm really proud of that. I think that that is an important perspective to show the world, you know, in terms of how kink happens and where it's happening. It's not just happening in dungeons by skinny white girls and boys. You know, kink is happening across the world in such a huge, hugely diverse way. And Kink Academy strives to represent that. And I really am exceptionally proud of what Kink Academy stands for and what it puts out into the world.
And so just for people who are curious, it's a monthly subscription, and you can become a member and then watch as many of the videos as you want to and have the subscription for as long as you'd like to, right?
Yeah, I have done my absolute damnedest to keep it super accessible. I'm also very proud that we have paid all of the educators on the site, both were paid for their time and have an ongoing profit sharing opportunity through the site. And so the fee for Kink Academy is $20 to $25 a month, depending on if you sign up for 1 month or multiple months. You get a little cheaper if you sign up for multiple months, and you have access to 1400 videos, which you can watch over and over. You can watch and then you can pause. You can, you know, like I'm great at a lot of kinky things, but I suck at bondage. Let me tell you, I do not have a lot of times the patience, but Kink Academy videos have really helped me, because rather than being even in a class where I'm kind of forced to keep up with a room full of people, if I'm watching a video, I can actually practice on the rope, on a pillow, pause the video, practice some more, watch a little bit more, that sort of thing. And so it becomes this really incredible, you know, have you got a date Friday night at 9 p.m., 8 o'clock, pull up Kink Academy, watch a couple of 5 or 10 minute videos, pick up some inspiration or a new skill, and wham, bam, you can wow your date. I mean, it's an incredible, accessible resource.
Oh, I totally agree. And I hope everyone will go check it out, because if there's anything you want to learn, and not all of the videos are explicit either.
So. Oh no, there's a lot of them that are breaking down the understanding of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So for people who aren't sure that they want to see like full nudity or like, you know, full kink, they're like Reed Mihalko, I think, is on there talking about rough sex and all of the clothes are on and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of different levels. And so again, since you are in control of your own experience at Kink Academy, if you don't like a topic or an educator or how something is being talked about, click away and you watch something else.
Well, I'm curious, because you've created this incredible site that has just you know, well over 1,000 videos, and you've been doing this for 16 years, and then you worked as a professional dominatrix for 10. What kind of drew you into the world of doing sex work and kind of exploring this side of yourself? Like, what was that start like for you?
Sure. I also get that question of like, how do you get into this? And I'll be honest, you know, I think it was a fairly direct path for me. I have been, since I was young, really interested in talking about stuff I'm not supposed to talk about, you know, which my mother will confirm that, you know, if it was something that I wasn't supposed to say, I totally wanted to say it. And so, and the whole idea of gender dynamics have always been really interesting to me, and power and kind of how power plays out. And so when I was in college, I was about 20, a friend of mine suggested that I become a stripper. I was working for a band promoter at the time, and somebody ran into my car, so I didn't have a car, so I couldn't do that work anymore. And a friend of mine was like, you know, well, when we go out and go dancing and drinking, you dance kind of slutty, maybe you should be a stripper. And I was like, holy shit, you're a genius. and so for me, stripping was kind of a boot camp for professional domination, because I did bachelor parties. And if you can control a room full of drunk men, then one submissive is a breeze, to be honest. And so, and I found stripping to be incredibly empowering. I know that that is not the experience for everyone, and that might surprise some people, but I found it to be, you know, to walk into a room and to be supposedly vulnerable by being naked, and yet to be able to orchestrate how people behave around you was my first taste of turning that gender dynamic on its head. Because one of the things, you know, I mean, I was 20 years old and have always been very flirty and, you know, exhibitionistic. And I realized, you know, that men were going to be objectifying me no matter what, and that I would prefer to profit off of that than to simply feel shitty about it, which is what a lot of women go through. And so I took control of that knowledge that as a woman, I was going to be objectified, and that if that was going to happen, it was going to be to my benefit and not to my detriment. And so for me, you know, when I was a stripper and men would misbehave, I'd make them bark like dogs, or I'd stick them in the corner. And I didn't know what that was. That was just me being me. And so when I discovered then the BDSM world through a foot fetish party, when I moved to Boston, you know, the first time I walked into a foot fetish party and I saw this incredible range of women being worshipped and adored and treated respectfully, you know, it was like angels and rainbows and unicorns, you know, shitting glitter. You know? like this is where I belong. And so I really did jump in with both feet. And my life has never been the same since, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
What do you think is the number one misconception that people have about either being a dominatrix or working with a dominatrix?
That it's about sex in the traditional way. And I'm very open about, you know, what my career path has been. And I've been retired for 6 years. I'm no longer a professional dominatrix. I still have a couple of personal submissives because I'm a kinky person. But one of the things that comes up a lot is that people don't understand that it's not about genitals. Now, I'm not saying it's not about sex, because that's ridiculous. Obviously, it's about sex. It's about sexual energy and those kinds of things. But when it comes to domination, the sex is happening in our minds, which then gets translated into these physical experiences, like treating someone like a dog or smashing a pie in their face, right? Like, those were my traditional scenes. My scenes did not have anything to do with genitals. They were very psychologically based, particularly because humiliation was my specialty as a pro.
Okay, so one of the things that I get asked a lot on the show that specifically is around hiring like a pro dom or a sex worker or a sacred intimate comes from people who are in relationships where they're not getting their sexual needs met, usually in a long-term marriage. And so they're considering working with a professional and they want to know if they need to tell their spouse. And I tend to err on the side of you should be as ethical as possible and have a conversation about why you might need this without also shaming people who just really feel like that's not an option for themselves. And yeah. I'd love to know kind of how you've navigated that kind of gray space.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the clients that I had were married. And most of them had made some attempt. And as a pro, definitely clients skew 95% towards men. That's just a fact of how the world works, right? And so a lot of these men who desired submission and who desired release from the pressures of masculinity in the world today had tried to speak to their wives. And a lot of times the wives would, because again, women are not taught how to deal with sexuality in general, let alone sexuality that, you know, is different than, you know, your kind of average tits and ass, let's go fuck missionary style sort of sexuality. Right. And so a lot of these men had to have tried to talk to their wives, and the wives often said, you know, I don't want to spank you. You're not my kid. You know, I married a man, not a bitch boy. And I think that that is an absolutely tragic thing. And a lot of times comes from women simply not knowing how to claim their own sexual power, which is why I work with so many women on exactly that. So my feeling is this, is that absolutely honesty is the best choice typically in a relationship, right? I encourage everyone to try to have that conversation. But I understand if it doesn't necessarily go well, and that doesn't mean that your needs disappear, right? And so those are a lot of the clients that I would end up working with. And I think of it like this. There are people who don't believe in therapy. There are people that believe that therapy is quackery, that it's, you know, a waste of time, that it's a waste of money, that you should just suck it up, get over it, you know, talk to your buddies, whatever. And so if you felt that you really needed therapy, and your partner didn't believe in therapy, what would you do then? Right? Now, BDSM is therapeutic, but it's not therapy. Please don't misunderstand, right? I'm not saying that BDSM is equal to therapy, but I'm saying that if you have a need that is a critical part of you existing in the world and being a happy, healthy person, I think that it's important that you fulfill those needs in a way that is as ethical as possible. Right? And I worked with a number of men who certainly struggled with guilt, but who were able to, for 1 hour a month or whatever it was, come and have these experiences, have the freedom from the role in their life, which is why they then come to a pro, and then can go back to their lives and actually be a better husband, a better father, a better person in the world. And so I personally don't think that that is a negative thing, but you have to really figure, that's one of the things about figuring it out, and which is, it's one of the tragic aspects of people not talking about their sexuality before getting into these, like, you know, long-term committed relationships.
Yeah, I love so much of what you said. And I think what's so important is each of us has to decide what we need. And then if we're willing to face the consequences of what happens if someone finds out. And you may decide, like, if I get to do this for 10 years and it's a critical part to me feeling happy and healthy, and then at some point something gets discovered and now we have to have some tough conversations, that might be something you're willing to do, or you might want to have the conversations on the front end. But I love what you said about therapy. I think that's a wonderful analogy.
Yeah, and it's because I have seen the damage done to people that try to stifle and ignore and discard these desires. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work on a long-term basis. And in fact, what it does is it tends to create a binge mentality and then even more shame, right? You avoid, you avoid, you avoid, you avoid, you can't help it. You go and you hire a dominatrix or, you know, whatever the case may be. Then there's this horrible deep shame about it that is damaging on any number of ways. So you ignore it, you ignore it, you ignore it. And I've seen that happen. And it hurts my heart when I see that, because your sexual needs are not wrong inherently, you know, and the inability of some people to find freedom in their sexuality means that there is a big gap in their lives.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that it's important for our listeners to know that it's one thing to be fully aware of the things that you're interested in or the things that you may want and to consciously choose not to do those.
Yes.
Versus trying to pretend like this thing isn't inside of you or fantasizing about it constantly and feeling like you can't talk about it. And that's, I think, when it starts to tear you apart.
Yes, exactly. And like for example, cissification. So to bring it back specifically to humiliation, cissification, which is when cisgendered men are dressed in women's clothing as a humiliation technique. Now, for me, it's important that that isn't about denigrating women, because some of what cisification is, it's like, oh, I'm going to turn you into an inferior creature, a woman, right? And I can't get behind that. But when it comes to simply like the taboo nature of gender expression, cisification is the perfect example of how men struggle with their sexual desires, right? So cross-dresser or somebody who wants to be cisified, a man who wants to be cisified, might give in to his desire, right? This is the way that he's thinking about it. He might give in to his desire, go out and buy some satiny bras and panties, you know, dress in them when he's alone. Then he struggles with the guilt of it. He throws all of it away. He tries to ignore it. You know, before too long, he's got to go out and buy some more satin panties because the need is still there. And this is this struggle that because toxic masculinity does not allow men freedom of a spectrum of sexual expression, then this guilt comes in. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about avoiding stuff that's damaging or non-consensual. You know, don't do those things. But when it comes to something that's like, say, harmless as a man dressing in panties, that's what I'm talking about. That if that's the kind of desire that you have, you are okay. You are not a bad person. You are not a bad man. You are not less of a man or any of those things. But those feelings and those assumptions can stop people from exploring their sexuality. And that's what I'm talking about is damaging and doesn't work.
I've gotten so many emails from men who like signing it like your sissy sub or sissy Rob or those kinds of things. And I love that they feel safe kind of expressing that part of themselves with me. And one of the things that I see consistently coming up in the questions is my wife doesn't know what to do with this or she's not interested. And it's really interesting because I've found that in me, I am pretty naturally submissive with my sexual partners. But a couple of years ago, I actually had a cis male submissive for about 6 months. And it was kind of fun to play in that space, but I I constantly felt this like, oh shit, now what do I do with this person? Like, yeah. He wants me to tell him to do these things. And I'm like, what the fuck do I say? Because I'm worried about saying the wrong thing or it not being right. And, you know, then I'm like, yeah, all up in my head. And so I'd love, like, for people who are listening who maybe are interested in trying this dynamic, but maybe the wife or the partner isn't really sure how to kind of step into her, like, domness. Do you have any suggestions for how you can kind of, like, tap into that part of yourself?
Well, that's exactly what I do a lot of coaching on, actually, because what you just described is probably the most common obstacle that people have, is that they're horny. They've decided they want to be kinky, and then they just don't know where to go from there. And that kind of, that sense of, am I doing it right? Is so useless.
Yes, it totally
it's
is.
So useless, but it's so common. But because the bottom line is this, if you are embracing your sexual confidence, you're doing it right. That's just it. And when it comes to, are they going to enjoy everything that you do? That is an unreasonable expectation of perfection that you have got to let go of, ladies, men, and everybody and anyone on the gender spectrum. Perfection is not what we're after. You do not have to be perfect as a dominant. I think that is also one of the most useless myths around dominance, is that it's okay if you do something and then later on they tell you, that wasn't really for me. That doesn't undermine your dominance or your fabulousness or anything unless you let it. And so I'd say that the way that you build confidence is by creating successful experiences. And the way that you create successful experiences is by taking the pressure off, you know? And this is where it comes back to my advice not to stuff yourself on the kink buffet. It's a lot easier to feel successful when you're not juggling, you know, three balls on fire and a chainsaw. If you are instead focused on a particular activity or a particular feeling or a particular way to connect, and then do that successfully and build from there, you will continue to build confidence, which is so attractive and is so sexy. And then the ideas will come. And I look for inspiration everywhere. I'll tell you what, Mr. Burns on The Simpsons is one of my favorite dominant role models. That man knows a good mind fuck. I'll tell you what, him and his little buddy, I can never think of his little buddy's name. But his, you know, his little assistant, that's obviously his submissive. Look around and feel inspired by the world around you, and then incorporate that into your own expression of dominance and just give it a go. And I'll tell you this too. If your partner makes you feel shitty for not doing it right, that is the problem. Not you not doing it right, quote unquote. This is a team sport. Kink is a team sport, and you have to be on the same team together.
Oh my God, I could not agree more with that. She's that needs to be a
so
bumper sticker.
I'm standing on right now, I know.
Well, and I love what you said too about look for inspiration everywhere, because I've noticed that a lot of people who come to me, I tend to work with like vanilla folks, and they come to me a lot talking about like, well, our sex just isn't very connected. It's kind of boring. And when I ask like, well, what are you using to like learn and expand and get new ideas? And they're not. And so I love this, like, look for inspiration, watch videos and read books and watch shows and let it inspire you, or like,
and take notes.
Yes.
So here's another one of my little quips is structure supports spontaneity. Okay. That all people, whether it's vanilla or kink or whatever, seem to think, or at least a lot of people seem to think, that sex should just happen magically. And that's the only way that it's happening correctly, right? Is that it's that movie scene of sweeping everything off the desk and fucking passionately on the table. Okay, that can happen, but most of us are too goddamn busy, and who's going to clean up all that shit from the desk, you know?
Yep.
And so I thoroughly believe in creating support that allows for spontaneity. So like I'm a big Evernote user, but I used to have like a little notebook that I would keep. And when, because kink, if you're kinky, kink is in your mind at any given point of the day. If you see something that inspires you, jot it down, because our brains are full of life stuff. And you may not remember, like you may have this brilliant idea for a scene, but then Friday night date night comes along and you're like, oh damn, I was going to do that thing. And now I can't remember. So let's just watch CSI, right? Is CSI still on television?
I'm not sure, but yes, yeah, exactly but, that.
Right? And so take notes and don't be ashamed to, oh, actually I have a blog post coming up on getting submissives involved in brainstorming and sharing their fantasies and taking responsibility also for making play happen. Ooh. Because a lot of dominants, here, I'm back on my soapbox again. A lot of dominants feel like it is only their responsibility to make play happen. And that is also bullshit. I call bullshit. Submissives have, again, team sport here, people. Submissives have a responsibility to share their interests, to talk about their desires. Now, if you have a power dynamic, you should do it within that dynamic. Maybe it means writing it down in a journal. Maybe it means requesting respectfully and groveling and begging for a certain kind of play. Ooh, how delicious can that be, right? But you are both. You should both be, this is one of the few shoulds that I get to say, and I feel confident in saying, you should both be trying to make fun stuff happen. It is not just one or the other's responsibility.
Yes. And one of the things that I love about that suggestion, that perspective, is that especially if you're in a heterosexual dom sub situation,
yep,
empowering the sub, especially if she's a cis woman,
yes,
to articulate her needs and her fantasies. Like, to me, that is such a beautiful gift to give a submissive, empowering them through that process of actually getting to ask for what they want and then finding a way to play with that. Like, I love that so much.
Definitely. And I totally agree. You know, women have, or female socialized individuals have a tendency, right, to not talk about their fantasies, whereas men or masculine identified people tend to feel a bit more comfortable with that. But something I've found about submissives is that no matter where on the gender spectrum you are, submissives often feel restricted in their ability to share their fantasy. There's this phrase called topping from the bottom. That is one of the biggest fears that I see in submissives. They say, you know, I don't want to tell the dominant my fantasies because they might think I'm topping from the bottom. They might think I'm trying to control the scene, even though I'm a submissive. But here's where intention matters. Because when dominants can convince their submissives, or even better, when submissives can convince their own damn selves that their fantasies are important, and that if they're sharing their fantasies without demand, then that is not topping from the bottom. That is helping your dominant create scenes that are exciting for both of you. Now, there's a difference between a submissive saying, I want you to spank me, and if you don't spank me right, I'm going to pout, right? Or maybe unconsciously, right? That I'm going to share my fantasy with you, and then if you don't do it, I'm going to be mad. That's different. That's kind of gross. But if you share your fantasy, and if you really verbalize, and if you have an environment where the dominant sees that as a benefit, and doms, please see this as a benefit. Stop working so damn hard, dominance, and allow your submissives to help you with. They are so creative. I just had a fabulous somebody that I'm kind of starting to dabble and play with, and we were tweeting some kind of playful things about chastity, and they tweeted back something about, well, I don't know if I can text you with my nose laying on the ground. And I thought, ah, but you should try. Right? Yep. Now, if I didn't allow the people I played with to have that kind of banter with me, think of how many of those amazing ideas I would miss out on. So share your fantasies with each other and think of this as a team sport.
Oh my gosh. I want that to be what everybody walks away from listening to this episode remembering, is that kink is a team sport. I love that so much.
Yeah.
Well, I have so many other things I want to talk to you about and some like really juicy listener questions, but we are at our hour, if not, I think we're a little over. So what I'd love is, one, to have you back on the show soon.
Yes, please.
So we can have a part two. And two, if you would share with everybody how they can find you and follow along with you.
Definitely. So enoughtomakeyoublush.com is the book site. I have a blog where I elaborate on ideas that are in the book and some other fun stuff like a humiliation truth or dare game. And I'm finishing up a humiliation workbook to go along with the book. So enoughtomakeyoublush.com. My coaching to help, If you're interested in coaching sessions, you can check out coachingbykali.com. And of course, kinkacademy.com. You can see plenty of videos of me and a ton of other educators and learn about all kinds of fun stuff. And of course, you can find my book, Enough to Make You Blush, on Amazon, both in paperback and in on Kindle. And just search either Enough to Make You Blush or Princess Kali, K-A-L-I, on Amazon.
Ah! Awesome. Well,
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're so welcome. This was so much fun. I'll have all your links on sexgetsreal.com. And of course, everyone, please go to Sex Gets Real and submit your questions so that the next time Callie's on the show, we can field some of your super sexy, kinky questions together. But yeah, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thanks, Dawn. Thanks for having me. I super look forward to next time.
Great. Well, thank you so much to everybody for listening. This is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real. Bye.